Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome into the NBA Morning Deuce for Friday, April 9th. We got a little bit of a smaller slate tonight from Thursday night, which is a good thing because, as I mentioned yesterday, got a big time guest co-host today. Got my guy Andrew Claudio, super producer from Knicks Film School on Blue Wire Pods, the best Knicks podcast in the business. And I want to dive into the Knicks. There are some games we're going to chat about, but I do want to dive into the Knicks. That's why we didn't talk Knicks much last night, because I want to get into the Knicks tonight. So I'm happy to have Andrew here. Andrew, what's going on, dude? Appreciate you jumping on with me.
What's going on, Joey? First of all, I guess thank you for having me on to dive into the Knicks and saving the Knicks topics for me, because I don't have to deal with that team on a daily basis. I'm looking forward to talking a little basketball, non-Knicks related. Believe me, non-Knicks related. But thank you for the kind words. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, I'll save the Knicks for the second half. We'll get into some of the... Look, I don't want to tell you this. I know it's tough when you follow a team every day, especially when there's ups and downs and struggles. I'm bullish on the Knicks this year. I like what I've seen from them. I think a lot of people are surprised of what they've seen from the Knicks this year. So I'm interested to hear your perspective on it. I'm sure it's different days than others.
I'll save the more in-depth talk for later, but I think every single Knicks fan, even the most optimistic of Knicks fans, didn't even expect to be doing anything but refreshing Tankathon at this point in the season. And here we are actually frustrated by losses. So
it's
a gift and a curse, relevant games this late in the season. But we can save that for later. I got you. Don't worry.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, now you're just, as a Knicks fan, you're hoping to see Dallas start to lose some games, right?
I will say that was fun for like the first 2 months of the season when we had their unprotected pick and they were like 8-15, mm-hmm. and you're rooting against them every night. Like the reason I signed up for League Pass this year was just to watch Dallas games. And then they got healthy and KP came back and Luka got in shape, and they're probably gonna end up with maybe even a 5 seed the way that they're playing lately. Time recording, they might upset the Bucks the way things are playing.
No Giannis, they're getting lucky scheduling wise. So yeah, that they're up 10 with 255 as we're recording this. So they're looks like they're gonna pull that one out. But let's get into some of the games from tonight. So the marquee game that was supposed to be tonight was the finals rematch, Heat Lakers. not really a finals rematch. No LeBron, no AD, no Talon Horton Tucker because he got suspended for a game. No Kuzma. So basically nobody.
Mm-hmm.
But the story coming out, the Heat win 110-104, but the story coming out of this and maybe already finding out that it's not as bad as it seems, but Victor Oladipo late in the game, a non-contact knee injury on the same leg that he had his ruptured quad that he's really just had issues with for a couple years now since that injury. He had a backdoor cut. Chris Webber was saying on the broadcast that it looked like it happened as he was cutting. He clearly must have done it either on the cut or on the jump because before he even came down from the dunk, which he did finish, he was holding his knee, goes back to the locker room, doesn't come back. Spoelstra says no update until tomorrow. Just a scary, no matter, regardless of what happens for the Heat or anything, it's just scary for that guy because he's been through so much with the injuries. It sucks to see him go out like that. And you just hope, regardless of where what you think about anybody, you just want to see a guy like that who's struggled to get back and is going into free agency. He's basically on a make good or on a prove it deal with the Heat for 3 months to try to get signed by the Heat. Now he goes down with this and potentially we'll see what the injury is.
Yeah, the Oladipo thing is interesting because like from a human side, of course, you're rooting for him to figure out some type of healthy stretch for his career, like whether it be adjusting the way Derrick Rose did and figuring out a different role. Can he be that elite player that one season in Indy, or did that injury kind of change the course of his career going forward? I know the Heat have been using him off the bench mostly since
he's been starting, he's taken Kendrick Nunn's spot. Kendrick Nunn doesn't play anymore. So he's been starting at the point, essentially. Well, Jimmy's like more of their point guard.
Right.
But Oladipo and Jimmy are their backcourt. Goran comes off the bench as the sixth man, so to speak. And then Kendrick Nunn just doesn't play anymore.
That's interesting. So then, look, from a human side, you hope that he is able to figure out his body. Like the season that he made, was it third-team All-NBA, second-team All-NBA? The mm-hmm. one season in Indy that he figured it out. The stories that were done on what he did to get in shape and the diets that he went on and just the different player that he became, you know, it made him an attractive piece potentially when the bigger markets came a call and come free agency. And I can, you know, speak from experience, our live chats and mailbags that we've had, a lot of Oladipo interest, but the one common theme that I keep going back to just from a basketball perspective is you have to understand this might be his career. He might always be coming off an injury. Might always be, you know, load management. Oh, he's out tonight with or day to day with injuries. And it sucks. And it's why the cost was so low at the deadline for the Heat. And yeah. For the Heat, it's a worthy gamble. For other teams that might have bigger long-term plans, like the Knicks have this Detroit pick that's an early second rounder, and a lot of Knicks fans were just give the Detroit pick, and it's like, I'd rather kind of save that. Like, because the other part, like, Oladipo hasn't been that productive this season. He has a lower true shooting than Elfrid Payton. So,
who we're going to talk about.
Well, believe me, we will. Look, I'm rooting for him to get healthy and to like, this is not obviously not personal, but you know, I can't say that just from a realistic perspective that I'm that surprised. This might just be the effects of coming off a very serious injury and how injury prone he's going to be going forward.
Yeah. And the scary part, I think from the, like you said, the human side of it, and even from the Heat or just anybody's side of it, is the non-contact nature of it, right? It's just,
yeah.
Anytime you see that from a guy who's had such a bad injury in the past, it's always concerning. And but now here's the thing. Bam Adebayo was asked about it after the game and said that, but Bam's an optimist. Bam's always a positive guy, but Bam, he said, you know, he was in the locker room congratulating us. I think it was just a little scare. I think he's okay. But what, I mean, Bam's not a doctor, and what was he congratulating you with his knee? I mean,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's like to see what the tests say.
This is also, and it pains me to say this because it's something nice about the Miami Heat, but this is also just a testament to that organization, that Heat culture stuff.
It's real.
Like it's real. Like guys go there. Like I'll never forget, like Dwayne Wade played his whole career there, went to Chicago for 2 years, or what, year and a half, then went to Cleveland for half season.
Maybe half a season.
Yeah, yeah, got traded at the deadline, and the first thing they said to him was, you're out of shape. Like, that's all it took, was a year and a half away, and he was so out of shape that they were measuring his body fat, his body index, and before you knew it, he was a very worthy sixth man on that team for the next two seasons. And yeah, it made you really appreciate, like, that's what Heat culture is. Like, you can laugh at it if you want and say, no, the Heat culture is LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade went to play for you. Like, if they went to anywhere else, it's like, if they went to the Jazz, it would have been Jazz culture, you know? Mm-hmm. Instead, like, they went there and it's Heat culture. Having said that, like, that's a real thing. That's why Jimmy Butler wanted to go there. And man, they just have a standard that you have to go to, and it might actually, it's why I think Oladipo was connected to the Heat as far as the team he'd be interested in, because maybe just for his health, it might be better to always at least be in tip-top shape and have the right people looking after you as you try to figure out how to stay on the court the rest of your career.
Well, and I also think that was part of the, you know, from a Heat perspective, going and getting him for these 3 months was to get your people on him, right? To know, is the injury going to be long-term? Can we get him in shape? Is he worth the deal? Because the Heat have set themselves up for free agency, and there's no one out there. Not that yet. There's no big names. Like, right, you know, we'll see what happens with Kawhi, because the rumors change every day with Kawhi.
Yeah.
But outside of that, after Giannis signed his deal, that was what the plan was for Miami. And then, and for a lot of teams, I think, that set up for this offseason, and he's off the table. So there's really not a big class. So they get 3 months to figure out. And now this happens. We'll see how bad it is. Even if, look, worst case scenario or best case scenario, he's got to be out for a few weeks, you'd think.
I would think so. And look, like, the best case scenario is it's 3 weeks, he comes back, he's healthy, and that's an extra body that goes to the Eastern Conference defending champs for this playoff run. And I have no idea what to make of this East right now. I have questions about literally every team. I think I know who's going to win the title this year, at least who's going to come out of East, but one of four scenarios could happen. And yeah, it's at least going to be interesting to watch, you know?
Yeah, and I will say this for him, since he's debuted, which is now four games, they're 3-1 now. Obviously, he didn't finish this game. And offensively, he has struggled, but he's been struggling. He was struggling in Houston. He was struggling in Indy. Like, this is not new, but they have played a little faster. They're turning teams over more. They're scoring more points off turnover. You've seen the difference, mm-hmm. Even though it's already a great defensive team. You see the impact on the defensive end a little bit. And he was having probably his best offensive game in this one. So it sucks. But the Heat still, like, they barely squeak out a win against basically a depleted Lakers team. And this has been the story of the Heat all year. They're so inconsistent. And they can't score. They just can't score the basketball with talent. And part of it is when I watch it, and I've harped on this a lot with Jimmy Butler. Even, I know he had 28. He had 28, and that's what people will point to. The guy could add 40. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams just can't stop him, and he's just that. It's the culture thing, which is real. But then at the same time, he's so unselfish to a fault that he passes up layups and he passes up mid-range jumpers to try to get other guys involved. When he could score, he could have put this game away early. I think he had like 5 field goal attempts at halftime.
Well, that's, you hit on it. I think he takes first halves off. I think he looks to distribute. I think he looks to get other guys going. Get, like, Tyler Hero has had a ridiculously bad sophomore season, and they're trying to regain some form of the bubble. If anything, just some form of his rookie season, if possible. I think he takes first halves off. And then looks to really turn it on in the third and fourth. Like, Kobe used to do this later in his career, because he knew, like, I can't do this by myself. I'm like, it's for as much as Kobe used to get for being ISO all the time. And, you know, I'm not going to pass, go get the rebound. Like, that was a common thing, is that he looked to get other guys involved in the first half. And I think that's what Butler's been doing since he came back. I keep reminding myself when I look at the Heat, and I'm like you, a little disappointed in what they've been this year. I got to keep going back to, Like, they also had a short offseason like the Lakers. Mm-hmm. So I have to think they're holding a little bit back because they know come playoff time, we can compete with anybody. We can, if we're the four, the five, or the six seed, like, that's fine. We're going to have to go through any of these top three teams anyway, as long as we're not in the play-in tournament, which I think at this point it's safe to say they won't be.
It's so interesting, though, because they could be. Like, in the way, in the nature of the way they've been this year, is it's been four wins here, five mm-hmm. losses, six wins, three losses. So they're just – and again, I guess it's going to hinge on what happens with Oladipo, because now – not that Kelly Olynyk was any type of stud for them, but if you don't have Oladipo and now you're down a big who mm-hmm. was actually more effective for them than people realize, these runs that they go now. And by the way, they also go on the road now. They go to, I think, Phoenix, Portland. It's a 4-game road trip, but three of the games are rough. Their next game is at Portland, and then at Phoenix, at Denver.
Mm. So that could be three down right there.
There you go. So yeah. and then they come home and
play Brooklyn after they play Minnesota. Okay.
So you know what I'm saying? So yeah. it just, where in most years you're like, this team, I mean, this team's a lock, but it just, though, you look at the schedule, which, by the way, people were touting as one of the easier second half schedules, not looking so much right now. You know?
So the thing about their second half schedule, they come home, not to do schedule radio, because that's obviously not the best, but they have two games against Minnesota. They have a game against Detroit. They're playing all these teams that are, like, they play Boston twice. They play Atlanta twice. They play all these teams that are going to compete with them for the rest of the Eastern Conference, like the bottom half. So I would lean on the side that they still have an easy enough schedule to get to at least the sixth seed. Like, that's the thing I keep saying, is I think they'll avoid the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
I also, and this is a tease for later, the Knicks schedule is brutal. So okay. I honestly don't factor the Knicks into that 4-5-6 matchup. Mm-hmm. What I think Charlotte's injuries are going to catch up to them. Boston, I mean, I watched them last night. There's nothing impressive about that team.
They kind of stink.
Their only solution is play the Knicks every night. That is the only chance they have at a victory. Other than that, like, Tatum's allowed to take any shot he wants. Marcus Smart, it's like he's shooting, 22% from three this season? And figures he's picked last night to hit two big threes down the stretch mm-hmm. against the Knicks. And, like, Jaylen Brown's good, but, like, outside of that, there's nobody in that rotation that would start on anybody else in the league, let alone nobody in that team would be in the rotation for Miami right now outside of those, like, top three or four guys. So I think just looking at the talent and what Miami's schedule is remaining, I have to think that they're at least one of the six best teams. Because if you want to put Atlanta and for shits and giggles, I can curse on here, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so for shits and giggles, let's just play let's keep Charlotte there. That Rozier will be able to keep them there. If you want, fine. We'll put the Knicks there at the six. The point is, I have a lot more upside with the Heat than all these other teams. And a lot mm-hmm. of it has to do with just the fact that I think they know we can turn it on enough for the rest of the season to just avoid having to play this tournament. And then come postseason, we'll be ready to go.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it's probably right. And I also, we didn't even mention the Hawks, who I got to think will, with all their injuries, are bound to regress here at some point, because they've been banged up all year, and John Collins is out. DeAndre Hunter's still, I don't know if he'll play. He's had this knee thing for such a long time. Mm-hmm. So I got to think they're going to regress, but Nate McMillan sort of, man, coaching his way into potential coach of the year's territory, the way he's turned that thing around.
Well, don't touch Tom Thibodeau's award just yet. Let's hold on a second. I will say, it is so very clear how not right for the job Lloyd Pierce was.
Right.
Which I think is what you're seeing now. Like, this happens in the NBA. Like, the uptick you get, or the boost you get from a new coach, You know, this happens in football. Like the almost guaranteed money line bet is, oh, new coach, bet the over, you know, or bet the money line on the team with the new coach. Baseball, it happens more than any other sport. Like teams win World Series when they change the manager midway through the season, you know? And so I almost wonder if because Pierce went out, an established coach that has been in the playoffs the last three seasons just stepped up and he figured out whether it be a rotation, whether it be getting them to play better defense.
See, that's what it is with Nate, is that the issues that I thought Lloyd Pierce got unjustly fired for, which was injuries, new guys not being like immediately Bogdanovich gets hurt. Mm-hmm. Gallinari gets hurt. I'm not even sure if Rondo played more than three games for this team. I never saw him play. DeAndre Hunter gets hurt. I'm just like, how can you fire a guy who doesn't get the full team that they brought in? Nate McMillan hasn't had that team either, and they're winning games. Mm-hmm. And you can't have a rotation because they just don't know who's going to play night after night. So that's what's been impressive with him to me, is that he's taking the same – he's just piecing it together night after night. Like Capella didn't play the other night, and they still – it's just like they – he plays on and off. So it's been impressive what he's done. I think they'd have to finish top four for him to get – in the mix for that. But
I would say they'd have to finish top three. Like, is there precedent for a guy taking over that late in the season and winning coach of the year?
No, I don't think so. But so. But there, I don't know that there's, even though coaches take over in the middle of the year in the NBA and do better, I'm not sure that they were really bad. Like this team was trending towards like another high lottery pick with Lloyd Pierce. So like I was part of, unfortunately, when I worked for the Hornets, I was part of many coaching changes. I've seen coaches do well and then it sort of plateaus, you know, like if you're a bad team, you're a bad team regardless of coach. So let's see. I mean, if it keeps trending up, he's going to be in the mix. I do think the voting media, it will still trend towards Doc Rivers, Quinn Snyder, Monty Williams, like the best coach of the best teams.
You know? Yeah.
Which is understandable, especially my prediction was after the break was that the Suns will finish with the best record in the NBA. So if that happens, Monty Williams is getting it.
You're on that right now. Jeez. Yeah.
That team is absurd. We didn't get to talk about them last night. They're playing right now too. We can talk about them real quick because they're playing right now. And Utah's playing that game last night. I'm not sure about you. I watch Phoenix. I watch Utah. I buy Phoenix so hard. I do not buy Utah. I still don't buy Utah. I still don't think.
Why do you think that is? Because I don't either.
First of all, I don't think they're a very athletic team. I think they're a good, like, I don't trust, you know, a crunch time lineup where Mike Conley, who I love Mike. I was with Mike in Memphis for a year. Great dude. A little bit older, not the same defender he used to be. And then Donovan Mitchell's he's not a minus defender, but he's not a plus defender either. And then you got Bogdanovich who doesn't move. Ingles is a decent defender. So I think ultimately like good teams, like really good teams in a 7-game series are going to put points on this team. And part of what their calling card is their defense, right? Rudy Gobert. And then, you know, I hate to say it. I just don't buy Donovan Mitchell as the best player on a championship team. I just don't, I know what he's capable of, but even watching him this year and seeing some of these great games, I see other guys, like I see Devin Booker starting to ascend past him a little bit. I see other players starting to ascend past him and him sort of staying where he's at, which is all-star, potentially an all NBA team at some point, high level scorer. That's about it. Yeah.
So if we're doing voting right now, I think they're going to have the coach of the year or top three for coach of the year. They're going to have somebody top three for defensive player of the year. They're going to have somebody for top three in.
Well, they have the sixth man.
They have the sixth man of the year in Clarkson.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to finish with, if not the best record, the second best record in the NBA. And I have not seen one person that speaks about basketball intelligently that thinks that team has enough to, and I don't even know what it is. Cause like a lot of people were picking them to come out of the East last year. And then like Conley wasn't what everybody expected. Expected this year.
It was such an overreaction. It was, everyone was like, this is a really good team, and they got Mike Conley.
Mm-hmm.
It was such an overreaction the way people had them top two, top three. Now, they're playing great. I get it. Mm-hmm. I'll say this too. It's proven the way the league is right now. You have to have great, not good. You have to have elite wing players to win championships in this league, and they just don't have it. Like Donovan Mitchell is a guard. He's a 6'3 combo guard, scoring combo guard. That's not going to shut down LeBron. That's not going to shut down Kawhi. That's not going to shut down Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray. And that's not going to shut down Devin Booker. And then if they were to get to the finals somehow, you ain't shutting down Kevin Durant and James Harden with that. They don't have the wings. And that's really to make it as basic as possible. To me, that is what I think people are not bought in on, is that they are ultimately going to have to run up against a team that has elite wing play, and they don't have that.
I think that's a good point. I think just from narrative perspective, I think a lot of people just, like you said, the thought of Western Conference champion Utah Jazz, and it's like Rudy Gobert standing next to Donovan Mitchell, is just not something anybody can actually visualize as a reality. I'm not... Like, a lot of people were making the comparison that they're the 2014 Spurs, and I never saw that, because I didn't see a single Hall of Famer on this Jazz team, and, like, that team had multiple. The better comp is the 2015 Hawks that won 60 games, and they got swept by the Cavs when we got to the conference finals, because one team had LeBron, one didn't, and I feel like... Going into the playoffs, if one team has LeBron and the other one doesn't, I pick LeBron. If one team has Kawhi, the other team doesn't, I pick Kawhi. If one team is Jokic and the other team doesn't, I pick Jokic. And unfortunately, that's how I feel about the Jazz.
I'll give you my comp for the Jazz. And I've seen the Hawks one a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This was the comp, and I may have even made it on this show. My comp is more the 2016 to 2018 Raptors.
Ah, the DeRozan-Lowry team.
Yep.
Great regular season team, great home court advantage, just come postseason.
Great veteran all-star backcourt, two guys who are all-star level players in your backcourt, great defensive big, Serge Ibaka, Jonas Valanciunas, great bench, Jordan Clarkson, Joe Ingles. They had Siakam, OG. That was Fred. That was when their bench was like what they were known for. They were coming in and killing people. But ultimately, when you looked at that team, you're like, DeRozan and Lowry just can't, they're not going to win you a championship. And that's what I look at with this team. They're two best offensive players. Rudy is their best, is probably their MVP candidate type of player, if there was going to be one. But your success is going to hinge on Mike and Donovan. And that's how it was with Toronto. And you never really bought it, right? You just never bought that team could get over the hump with those guys.
Yeah. There's just so many other teams I like more than the Jazz. Like the Knicks have played the Jazz twice. Luckily they caught them early, so they're one of the wins that teams had against the Jazz early in the season when they were winning like 20 out of 21 games. But there was never a point where it's like, I'm afraid of Rudy Gobert. I'm afraid, like, Donovan Mitchell's great, don't get me wrong, but I'm not. He doesn't strike fear into me. We mentioned the team that they played a little bit, but like the Suns have like four guys I would be more afraid of to take a shot before. Or I guess two guys than Donovan Mitchell, you know? Yeah. I think Ayton and Bridges are up there as well, as far as like pieces I'd rather have. Maybe not more than Mitchell, but like than the rest of
just
them,
a, they just
team.
Have like a, they have just like a super version of the Jazz's backcourt.
Mm-hmm.
And like Devin Booker, and I'm not trying to knock Donovan Mitchell, because Donovan Mitchell is a great player.
Mm-hmm.
But Devin Booker, I don't even think he's hit his peak yet. Like his upside is insane. And he's already one of the best scorers in the NBA. He's a little bit bigger. He's more skilled with the ball. He's got more of a in-between game. Like he's more all three level scorer than Donovan Mitchell to me. And then Chris Paul is one of the best point guards to ever play the game. Plus, you know, DeAndre Ayton's just a massive human. So like, it's great to have the best defensive center in the league, and Gobert. But it's not like you're like, when you look at Phoenix, it's not like the drop-off is just this gigantic drop-off defensively. Because then you also have a ton of, the difference here now with those two teams is We're talking about Joe Ingles, Bogdanovich, Royce O'Neal, or Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, athletes that they can switch one through four. They can play any type of defensive scheme, and it's going to be more disruptive to a team with great wings in the playoffs because they have wings that can guard those, or at least disrupt those guys. No one can really stop the best guys, but that are more disruptive.
Is this Chris Paul MVP campaign real?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I
don't even want to like disrespect it and say like no, but I've never heard of somebody coming out of left field this late. I'm not even sure. Like, obviously he's an important piece, but like it almost feels as if he's just put rest of the pieces in motion, if that makes sense. You know?
I think the only thing that's giving it any type of legitimacy is the injuries. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, all the guys who have legitimate cases to be MVP this year, other than Jokic, have been hurt for substantial amounts of time. It was Embiid's to lose for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then he's hurt for it. It was LeBron's to lose. He probably can't get it now because I don't know when he's going to be back. Who else? Jokic is obviously up there.
Mm-hmm.
I had Dame Lillard. I thought he would play his way into it because of the way he was playing in the first half. He's still second in the league in scoring, but that team has calmed down a little bit. I thought they were going to go on more of a run. So I think, but I also do think like he's not, I mean, he is the best player on his team, but he's not the only star. You know, it's not like he's like single-handedly, he has probably single-handedly turned him or into a winning team. Like he's the guy, place him in there. They're a winning team now, but like,
it'd be very Jason Kidd 03 when people thought he should be the MVP. I guess Nash.
Like, but I think I think because of what happened with Nash, that'll never happen again.
But don't you think that CP3 has more, maybe not more respect, but like maybe this could be the, like how much shit he takes for his playoff failures. Like now we're going to give him an MVP. So that way that makes up. Because that's the thing about the voting is some of it's, you know, numeric based, but some of it's also narrative based. And it's like, we're going to give Chris Paul an MVP before we can't anymore. Could be a narrative that people get behind.
Yeah. Well, but I also just think like, I just don't see a scenario where a guy averaging 16 a game gets MVP in this league because the narrative is there, but
it's the Chris Paul thing that I'm thinking of.
I know.
If LeBron can't get it, can LeBron's media mafia, as Simmons calls it, get it for his buddy, Chris Paul?
I don't think there's going to be enough. There's too many other guys. Too many other guys and good narrative, like just guys that the media likes, you know, like everyone loves Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
I think like if the season ended today, he'd get it more so on the sense that like everyone just loves him. You know, Jokic has taken Luka's place in the MVP race this year of the guy who everyone crowned before this, like everyone crowned Luka before the season. They're having a rough year. All right, well, let's find the other white European guy who's having a great year on a good team. All right, it's Jokic, you know.
In all fairness, he's also having a ridiculous
season. He is, and they're a great team. And by the way, that's a team that they're the only team in the West right now that I see. And I love Phoenix. They're the only team in the West that I see that even if the Lakers are healthy, like fully healthy, I think Denver can compete with them.
Really?
I'm not saying they can beat them.
Okay.
Compete though. Like give them a real series. Give them a real series. I really do. They're so loaded. And the jump that Michael Porter Jr. has taken this year, the way they're defending now with Aaron Gordon on the team, it's been just a perfect trade. It takes the pressure off Jamal Murray to have to go out every night and be the guy he was in the bubble because he can't do it. He hasn't proven that he can do it every night. I love what that team is doing right now. They're the only ones really that I think could compete. But if the Lakers are healthy, they're coming out of the West.
So. Right. I would agree with that, which I mean, I was thinking Phoenix could even be that team that could make it a series just because
listen,
eventually Chris Paul's this is going to happen for him. Like he's one of my favorite players ever. And I hate that there's a narrative around like he's a choker because so many circumstantial things happened. Like I can't explain the loss to Houston in 2015 because I still have no idea how they blew that fourth quarter up, 22 against Josh Smith, Ronnie Brewer, and Dwight Howard. And that's how they lost.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's been very much like he lost to a better team and there's been some officiating stuff.
So there's something to it, like the Chris Paul. Yeah, I mean, look, because historically, what people, when they talk about choke, like Chris Paul choking and this and that, they have to also keep take into account that he's the best player on every team he plays on, and you don't win championships when your point guard's your best player. It just doesn't really happen.
I guess so. We're not including like the Magic's of the, we're not saying Magic's a different version.
It's a different thing. Isaiah Thomas is probably the one, right?
And Steph would be the other one, but that's
another anomaly too, right? Where it's just like, when you have like a true 6'2" and shorter point guard, mm-hmm. who's a distributor and if that's your best player on your team, historically, you just don't win championships. It's tough. And he's always the best player on most of his teams. So it's tough. I mean, I agree with you. I don't take anything away from him. But I do think matchup wise, it would be really hard for them to handle AD and LeBron. Like defensively, they have bodies to throw at those guys. I don't know if they have enough. Denver has so many big bodies now to throw at those guys, and different types of defensive looks they can give. Like they haven't even started playing JaVale McGee yet, who I know people think is a joke. But I think they traded for him for the Lakers series. I really do.
It's like, you remember how teams used to kept getting Shaq stoppers in the early 2000s, and like the Nets traded for Mutombo solely because, well, we got dominated by Shaq last year. We might as well just trade for Mutombo. He played like 14 minutes the season because they're like, well, we play better without him, but hypothetically, if we play the Lakers in the finals, we'll keep him. That's the JaVale McGee signing, is that we need guys to throw away.
If you go back and look at their series last year, they struggled with the Lakers. When the Lakers went big and had like Dwight and AD in the game at the same time, they couldn't handle it.
Series was Dwight Howard went into the starting lineup, and I was like, oh, you now cannot guard us.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. We'll see. I love the West. The West playoffs are going to be fascinating. Mm-hmm. They're going to be fun either way, because there's a bunch of good series. Because we haven't even talked Portland. I mean, who wants to play Portland? Like, you don't want to play Portland in the first round. You know what I'm saying? They're players.
There's legitimately seven teams that you could talk me into scenario where they come out of the West. And then there's these three teams in. So what do you want to see as those last three teams?
In what do you mean?
So you got 1 through 7, the teams like Dallas.
Oh, you mean for the play-in.
Bottom three for the play-in. Who do you at least want to see in those one game scenarios? I have my answer.
I love Memphis personally. Okay. I do love Memphis, and I just love the way they play. It's just so weird. They're so weird. Like, I love John Morant's obviously a superstar, but then everybody else on that team is just like an all-star. They couldn't work anywhere else, but somehow Taylor Jenkins has gotten them to buy in and make it. Like Grayson Allen had 30 last night. I mean, come on. You always love, in a one game scenario, you want to watch Steph. Of course, right? Because
I want Luka. I want the Warriors to get to AC because I want Luka, Steph in a one game scenario.
And then, I guess ideally for fun, New Orleans would be nice to see in there because the Spurs are. I actually really like a lot of players on the Spurs. I like a lot of their young guys, but you know the Pelicans have just a fun team. Yeah, it was watching Zion is just a fascinating. Thing of it's just a fascinating exercise in physics and the human body and how it works. Like it doesn't make sense. I love I talk about him a lot on this show. I love Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball. So that would probably be my three.
There's your I would rather have I think I'd rather have Sacramento over the Spurs just because
Sacramento. I just don't even consider them.
I don't either.
I don't know. I know you said you've listened to the last few shows. I don't know if we've been talking about Sacramento the way we do normally, but we are not kind to the Kings on this show.
Really? What is it about them?
It's just a shit franchise. I mean, and so I just don't buy. And Luke Walton's a shit coach. And I just don't understand how he's still coaching that team. I like the players. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bad to the players. It's just that I just don't buy that they can turn things around with Luke still coaching the team. And I also hate Hassan Whiteside. And I feel like if you have Hassan Whiteside on your team, and he's playing minutes for you, you're at some point it's going to fall apart.
Significant minutes for your team too. Yeah. I like De'Aaron Fox. I mean,
he's playing great. This is quietly having an incredible year.
Don't say this to anybody in Knicks Twitter land, but I really like watching Tyrese Halliburton.
Very good player.
Yes, he's a really good player. I'll just leave it at that. they have a lot of nice pieces that I think when they get a new coach will fit much better. But yeah,
They went on a run when Bagley got hurt and they went small.
Yeah.
So it looked like they were turning things around. We were a little nicer. But we also, from the beginning of the season, when they hired Alvin Gentry, you're like, okay, that's their next head coach. Because Luke's going to get fired and then Alvin's going to take over. Like it seemed like the Nate McMillan, Lloyd Pierce thing. When Alvin got hired, I was like, oh, they're hiring Luke's replacement at least for half a season. And they haven't done it yet.
I feel like Luke Walton's had the, this is the loss that will cost him his job, like seven different times this season.
Yep.
And it just hasn't happened yet.
And the thing with Gentry too is all the stuff that you wanted Luke Walton for, like the Golden State and all that, Gentry was there.
Yeah.
Like Gentry was there. So he brings all the same stuff. That part of why he got hired in New Orleans was because he came from Golden State, right?
Well, he was even there before it got ridiculous, before it got so automatic, because he was there the first season when they won the title. And then next year, Steph went up a level, and then they got KD. So if anything, he's the more realistic, like next to the Warriors thing that you'd want to hire.
Such a weird thing. And that's part of like, they have the worst defense in NBA history.
Yeah.
Defensive rating in NBA history. So I just don't buy that they can put it together long enough, but they would be fun. They would be fun because they have a lot of fun players. That whole thing is going to be, it's going to be fascinating. And like the scariest thing, if you're in the West, and then I want to get back to some of these East games that play some of these teams tonight, but if you're the shittiest thing for any of these teams right now in the West is Utah, Phoenix, Denver that we're talking about might lose in the first round. Because you're going to have to play the Lakers.
So is there a scenario, because we hinted at it when they were playing the Heat tonight. We were talking a little about the Heat game. Is there a scenario where the Lakers fall to seventh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Into this tournament?
100%. I mean, even if AD comes, it just depends. Yeah, I was 100%. If they don't come back, look, they've played 52 games. There's 20 games left. If LeBron doesn't come back for 10 more games, anything's possible.
Yeah. I think he's there too.
He had that cryptic post today that made it seem like he might be back soon or something. I don't know. It was like winter's coming or I don't know, some LeBron thing. But yeah, if he goes 10 more games without him and then he has to come back and play his way in, I don't see a scenario. I could definitely see them playing or losing their way into that.
Because I almost wonder, and this is conspiracy corner for a second, but did they prefer that? Because you're gonna have to go through, because like right now, what you would say, the Clippers or Denver gets the three seed, right? That's your 3-4. Phoenix and Utah get 1-2. Like, wouldn't you rather take a chance in a one game scenario against this Warriors team and then another one game scenario against one of New Orleans, Sacramento, or San Antonio? And then you're going to Utah, which if you're healthy, I take the Lakers in that series.
Yeah.
And then you're in the conference finals or conference semis and you're playing what, the Clippers? Oh, I guess you'd play the winner of the four seed. So yeah, if you're playing the Clippers as the four seed and there's your path. Like if you think LeBron is as calculated as he has been in the past, I almost wonder if he's looking at it like, maybe that's the easier path. Would I want to go face the Clippers in the first round in a best of seven? I want to go face
or the Nuggets.
The Nuggets in a best of seven in the first round. Maybe dropping to seven and then it just adding to the narrative gets to the finals as an eighth seed or as a seventh seed.
Anything lower than five, because the Heat did it last year as a five seed just to show that he can one up what they did.
Well, it would be the lowest team to ever win the finals. Like the Knicks obviously made it 99 as an eighth, but the Rockets were a six seed in 95. And that's the lowest ever to win a title. So if he then.
So he can add that to the resume.
Adds that to the resume, the GOAT resume of being.
I never thought about this, but it is a great conspiracy theory.
Like, think about that for a second.
It
like,
is.
Being a seven seed to win a title is the last thing of the. Like, I'm the GOAT because I had the ultimate underdog victories in my career.
And not only the seven seed to win a title, but also the hardest seven seed to win a title because you had to win a game before the playoffs to get in.
They'd have to win two. That's the thing. They'd have to win the 7-8 and then the 7-8 versus the 9-10. So,
the way it works, we actually went through this on the show.
Oh, please help me.
So, seven plays eight, eight plays nine. The winner of 7-8 is the seventh seed. You have to win one game.
Oh, so you win.
And eight have to win one game. 8 and 9 or 9 and 10 have to win two games. So, let's say it is what it is right now, right? It's 7-8 is Dallas, Memphis, and then San Antonio, Golden State. Dallas plays Memphis. Let's say Memphis wins. They're the seventh seed.
So then Dallas would play the winner of the other game for the eighth seed.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. They couldn't have made it easier? Anyway, there is a scenario where LeBron says the better way to add to my legacy is and
win
then
an extra
like
playoff
just
game.
In time for Space Jam 2.
Yeah. Crazy. Absurd. Yeah. Absurd. All right, let's talk about getting back to the East, and we talked about, you know, the teams that bottom, obviously the top three are pretty locked in, 1, 2, 3, and then 4 through 10 right now are pretty wide, are pretty close, you know, and it could go anyway. One of those teams that if I'm the Knicks or any of those other teams that I'm scared about right now is the Bulls.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I've been watching these games since they traded for Vooch. They still don't even look that good. They've won three in a row. But him and Zach LaVine, they still are figuring each other out on the floor. They've won three in a row and they're starting to pour it on. They're young. They have a good mix of vets and young guys. They're athletic and they have an elite scorer. And now they have an all-star second option in Vooch. Like, that's a team that I could see making a run here late in these last 20 games to get some positioning. And then of course they beat the shitty Raptors tonight. But I'd be nervous about that team. That's the one team that's out right now looking in that I'd be nervous about.
I wonder if they dug themselves too big a hole. Like, they're coming from, what was it, 19 and 29? Or 28 was the record when they started this three-game winning streak. I mean, I haven't really looked at their schedule.
Well, they're in the play-in right now. They're 10.
Well, right now they'd be the 10, yeah. Because, like you said, the shitty Raptors.
The Raptors... they stink.
Why Larry's not on a different team, I have no idea. But they might not even matter because they're just going to keep losing anyway. Look, I think there's like we said before, there's like two teams that I could see figuring it out enough. And then for that sixth spot, yeah, I could see the Bulls getting there. It might be with exactly 35 wins to get to the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference this year.
Yeah.
But I still wonder if they dug themselves too big a hole. I like Zach LaVine a lot. Like, my buddy's been he's actually the one that hit me to his box scores every night because it was like, you need to start watching more Zach LaVine. Like, this guy every night is putting up 28 points. And then I was like, stop it, it's Zach LaVine. And then you get start watching him. It's like, oh, he can get a shot and get any type of shot he wants every single night. It's just shooting. It's through the roof. And obviously, Knicks fanitis, we were like, oh, how can we get him? Not realizing the Bulls are looking to keep him and build around him.
Yeah.
And they obviously made that commitment this year. I don't know. I don't know if I see them as a six seed. I'm legitimately scared of them passing the Knicks, but I think that has a lot more to do with the teams ahead of them. Just like we said, I think the Celtics stink. I think the Knicks are going to fall off a bit. And I think Charlotte's hit by a lot of injuries. So yeah. I think that's the Bulls' path to getting, you know, out of the play-in tournament.
Yeah. And the Pacers, too. Injuries.
I didn't even think about them. Wow. So irrelevant.
Well, it's right. Yeah. I mean, they can't stay. They're cursed. I mean, they literally might be a cursed team right now. It's just they can't get right. And they haven't been able to get right since what, 2 years now it's been? I mean, yeah. And the way you describe Zach is, it's interesting because we just got done talking about why the Jazz, and my reasoning for the Jazz not being that a team that can eventually go is Donovan Mitchell. Mm. I feel the opposite about Zach LaVine. I mean, he's like prototypical go-to scorer on a great team. 6'7", handles it like a point guard, can score at all three levels, great three-point shooter. One of the best athletes maybe that we've ever seen at the position.
Mm-hmm.
And can go and just scores in all ways. And I've talked about this I've probably said it like 5 or 10 times on the show, but my favorite thing about Zach LaVine is when he had one of the best draft workouts I was ever a part of in my life. Just, he was an absolute dog. Like, he wanted to win every drill, which is not always the case. Like, he was coming in there, because especially when you're with the Bobcats/Hornets, not everybody wants to play there. You still come there to work out, but it's not that exciting. He was out there just killing people. And I always remember that, because I'm like, man, this kid, he's going to work hard. He may not ever be the best player on a championship team, but he's going to bust his ass to be a really good player in this league. And he's a killer right now.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a lot of guys with that skill set, with that size.
Yeah. When he was in Minnesota, I saw him as more of a sixth man. And then he went to Chicago, and obviously that changed everything. But I always thought that he would just be like a guy that you need a bucket. He's going to torch a bunch of second units. I never saw him as a starter long term. And it's probably one of the most wrong things I've been in the last couple of years, is like Zach LaVine might actually be a guy that could be like the best player on
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Succeed, you know. We'll see. The Bulls are in an interesting spot because they've now gone all in on this team of Vooch and Kobe White and LaVine, and I mean, who knows what they're gonna do with Markkanen. But they're a fascinating team, and I think, like you said, they're starting to peak once they, and they haven't even, like you said, figured it out yet in the East.
I looked at it today. When Vooch and Zach are on the court together, their defensive rating's like 101, which is not good. In the NBA, it's not good. It'd probably be one of the lower often. So like, they're still figuring things.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know, since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Out,
yeah.
The Raptors, dude, like I tweeted it earlier, it's just like, I'm anti tanking. I don't think like flat out tanking works.
We're in agreement. Yeah,
but I also think when you get to this point in the season, it's time to start when you know it's over, like, rest some guys, play some young guys, because their only chance as a franchise, to me at this point, unless Masai can turn, like, do something miraculous, is to get in the top five and get their franchise, another franchise player. Cause they paid a bunch of money to a guys who are not franchise players. They're not going to take them anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think
Boucher had 38-19 tonight, by the way, in a loss.
Props in a loss. Yeah. There's a lot of that with the Gary Trent hit a buzzer beater the other day.
Gary Trent's been playing really good for them, but Norm Powell got traded and his value got boosted because he was putting up these kind of games.
Yeah.
Interesting efforts.
Yeah. Toronto's, they won the title 2 years ago, which is still kind of crazy to think about that. Last year, I really enjoyed their title defense. It's not just like only Kawhi was the reason. Like, we were going to push the Celtics to a game seven. I had a little bit of money on them to come out of the East because I thought there's a version of them that could beat. It's literally what the Heat did. I thought Toronto was going to do.
A lot of people were on that train. Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously it did happen. I actually don't know if it's like Masai magic, like tanking would have even mattered. Because my argument anytime, because there's a lot of Knicks fans that are like, why aren't we tanking this year? Cade Cunningham, Jalen Suggs, like, fair point. Like, those guys are going to be at the top, but that shows just so little trust in your organization that nailed the Mitchell Robinson pick, that nailed the Emmanuel Quickley pick, it seems, that, like, you can pick in the mid-teens and still find a player to contribute because your development is so good. And, like, obviously, with the Knicks, they just had three assistant coaches have, like, head coach interviews in college because – like, they see, like, this is a good staff that's proven to develop. And then, like, Mike Whitson took the job in Indiana. So
Mike's a good dude, too.
Like, even more so, I trust the team that, like, developed Siakam into a player, that found Fred VanVleet out of nowhere, that, like, Boucher and Norman Powell and all these other guys that weren't lottery picks, that you look at them and if they end up with, like, the 15th pick in the draft or the 12th pick in the draft, like, I trust Toronto to develop a guy that gets drafted around then.
Kawhi Leonard, 15th pick in the draft.
Exactly.
Giannis, 15th pick in the draft. These great.
The argument against taking goes on and on. Like, the Pacers have never had a lottery pick, and they've still figured out ways to be relevant.
The Heat
are the best example of it.
Right. San Antonio. Mm-hmm. San Antonio, they're not going to win a title with what they're doing, but they got Tim Duncan 30 years ago, and then since then, it's just been, you know, plug and play. They find the guys that fit their system.
Denver.
It is remarkable that teams, and I think it seems like, for at least as far as the Knicks go, it seems that Leon and Wes kind of understand that is the way. It's to find your guy, not necessarily tank, evaluate talent.
Yeah.
And get the right picks. Right. Yeah. And then bring in the right players for a system. If Tibbs is the long-term coach, which, you know, for now he's the guy, right?
For now, yeah.
Yeah. But before we get into the Knicks, last game was Milwaukee Dallas. Obviously, Dallas ended up winning by 15. Milwaukee, no Giannis, but I'm interested in your thoughts. I watch this team, the more I watch them without Giannis, the more I'm like starting to turn the corner on. Not that they can beat the Nets, like same thing with the Lakers, but that the Drew Holiday move, and when PJ Tucker gets healthy for them and Bobby Portis coming off the bench, like, they seem to have their rosters. The more I watch Drew Holiday without Giannis, it makes me confident that maybe this team actually can turn the corner in the playoffs. When I don't know that I trust Bud to get it done, but Drew has been a revelation for that team.
So I go back and forth on Milwaukee with a lot of people, because I actually think they've gotten a bad, and like someone with your expertise might actually be able to settle some arguments here. I don't think their reputation of playoff chokers is deserved. I think in that Toronto series, they were up 2-0, lost a double overtime game in game three, and then Fred VanVleet turned into Steph Curry for three games, and like they lost. Like, two of those games were road games with one of the best home court advantages in the league, and they just lost like a tough, close series. But
that team was a juggernaut. I mean, right? Kawhi, like, it was like
that's
a perfect
not a
storm.
Choke job. That's like you might have potentially lost to just a better team that was much more playoff battle tested at that point. And then last year, are we just gonna say, like, pretend like the bubble wasn't this weird thing where all of a sudden guys' career 3-point percentages weren't significantly higher because there's no crowd and it's like shooting in an open gym? They like Tyler Herro's not a 45% 3-point shooter. Anthony Davis isn't a 40% 3-point shooter. In the bubble, they are. I think last, like, plus Giannis got hurt. So not to minimize what the Heat did and say, like, last year the bubble deserves an asterisk, but, like, it was abnormal what happened. So you look at the Bucks this year, and I still, like, think I like them a lot. I could see them coming out of the East. I don't like the narrative that they're chokers because of these last two seasons, when if you really look at the details, I don't necessarily know if they deserve that reputation. What do you think?
It's an interesting thing. I agree with you on the Raptors stuff, and I do to an extent agree on the bubble, but I do think it was the thoroughness of how badly they lost to Miami, and the
Bud stuff is real. I will say that the Bud, I'm very concerned about Budenholzer.
Yeah, he's consistently, at least when I've watched, not put Giannis in certain situations where he could be even more dominant than he is. And then the big concern obviously becomes that you watch that Heat series in particular, they just have Giannis's number defensively. And when you have a back-to-back MVP, like I talk about a lot of times, like when I used to watch players, you know, like my biggest skill, like the biggest skill to me is, can I put the ball in your hands at the end of a game,
mm-hmm.
and trust you to get it done? I think a big part of what people see with the Bucks is they don't trust Giannis with the ball in his hands at the end of a game. And I don't even think the Bucks do.
I was going to say, should they?
No. And that's a problem because everything's built around him. You have a team that's it is 100% built to be around this elite wing player, but you can't really put the ball in his hands at the end of a game. But you also don't have a closer. Now, could Drew be the closer? Maybe. Chris Middleton hasn't proven to be that guy. So the choking being defined as a choke, you know, choking team in the playoffs, maybe a little bit unfair. But I do think, you know, best record in the league 2 years in a row and you get bounced in the second round. It's just a natural reaction.
I understand why, because people need to create content and these things need to get said. I think, like, in both scenarios, they lost to the team that came out of the East. And
I think losing 4-1 is a choke.
Giannis got hurt in game 4, though. Like, that's what I keep going back. Yeah, they were down 3-0. Well, yeah, technically, he got hurt in game 3. And then, it rolled tough. Over like, into game 4.
Yeah. Yes. I don't know. I still think losing 4-1 is choking. That's just me. I mean,
that's fair. That's fair.
And, like, yes. Like you said, like the Heat did come out of the East, but they're a 5 seed. They weren't supposed to come out of the East. Like, you should at least compete. They didn't compete. You know, it wasn't a competitive series. So to that extent, it was, but I don't see that happening. I think this team is just, I mean, there was a big reaction to them giving up four first rounders for Drew Holiday, but man, the difference between Eric Bledsoe and Drew Holiday is just absurd.
Yeah, you just hit on it. I think Holiday taking Bledsoe's minutes is going to pay dividends for them. The PJ Tucker signing, I haven't admittedly watched a lot of him in Milwaukee.
He hasn't
been
playing. He's been banged up. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe he played a game or two, but I saw him in street clothes the other night. I think I saw him in street clothes tonight too. Like, yeah, he hasn't played a ton.
So come playoff time, I think that's still a big, big signing. It's another defender. It's another perimeter score, and like we've gone this whole time and we haven't really talked about Brooklyn yet. I wonder if that's just going to be, they're just not going to be able to score as many points as the Nets, regardless of whether Giannis averages 40 for a series.
That's going to be everyone's thing. I mean, like, we talked about them last night on the show, mm-hmm. and it's just like, it's remarkable to me how Kevin Durant doesn't play for all these games. James Harden gets into the MVP conversation because he was playing really well. They're still one of the top teams in the East. And then Kevin Durant comes back and you're just like, no one could beat this team.
Yeah.
Like, no, Kevin Durant's just on such a different level than everyone else. Like, even those guys on his team, like Harden and Kyrie Harden's an MVP. Kyrie's an all-star. Kevin Durant's transcendent. Like you forget. I think Alex, my co-host, made a great point yesterday, which was like, because he was out for so long, we forgot a little bit. And then he gets hurt. So we forget a little bit, and then he comes back. You're like, oh yeah, that's why this team's probably going to win the East. It's a combination of the pieces.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come together if you don't have that piece.
Yeah. I've gone back and forth with every excuse I could to think of Brooklyn has. Not just like even just as the other New York team that like thought that we were getting KD and Kyrie until he tore his Achilles. Man, I thought that injury was significant enough that it poisoned the water a bit. And I even this season was like, look, he might look great for stretches, but I still need to see him play like a full season and then a full playoff. And then you saw what happened. Like mm-hmm. he got hurt and they were like, well, take your time. And we'll just say you had you were rehabbing your hamstring injury. But really, we're saving your playoff minutes. And then, look, this the stacking of this roster with I didn't think the Blake Griffin signing was going to be a big deal. But for what they need him to do, it's perfect. Same thing with Aldridge and like Bruce Brown turning into a player, Claxton turning into a player. The guy who got in the fight with Julius Randle the other night. There are guys that Jeff Green. Well, okay, Jeff Green finding a role on this team.
I mean, shooting like 45% from three or something. Yeah.
Well, because every three is open. You can't double a single play on this team when they have everybody.
Right.
That's why Joe Harris is shooting like 44% from three this season. If I had a bet right now or a pick right now, I'd say Brooklyn's winning it all. But it's amazing that they're like, especially with Nash and D'Antoni on that sideline, they're literally going to try and defy everybody that told those Suns and Rockets teams for years that you can't win without playing defense. And they're going to be the team that's like, okay, like defense wins championships, huh? Watch this. And they're just going to score 135 every night in the postseason.
Yeah.
And I can't say that it's not going to work.
Well, I'll tell you why they probably are going to win the championship. It's almost a lock at this point.
Okay.
I saw someone screenshot this on Twitter today, an ESPN video from First Take. I don't know. One of those shows. Okay. I don't watch them.
Same. And
the topic was, are the Nets a lock to come out of the East? And Brian Windhorst said that the chemistry between Harden and Kyrie is tenuous because Kyrie Irving tends to change his mind. Which is not necessarily false.
Mm-hmm.
Windhorst is wrong about everything.
Yeah.
So it's if he's saying it, go ahead and put heavy money on the Nets to win the title.
I just don't think it matters.
Because it's going to be the But I crush Windhorst on here all the time. I've never seen such a high level media member who just gets paid to be wrong about everything. It's fascinating mm-hmm. to me. So I talk about him a lot.
I feel like we could go through the list and. Yeah. Find a couple that are just as bad.
But... He's like built an entire podcast brand off of, I'm just going to say a bunch of shit and everyone's going to report it and I'm never right. But that's a whole other thing. I always bring up. We actually for a while did a, like early on in the show, we're doing a segment. Like what did Windhorst say today?
Because really?
It was like a stretch where I think it was during the off season. There was just the stretch of like free agency and all this stuff where every day there was another report with Windhorst and it was like, just blatantly wrong. Like none of it came true. Or just like, oh boy, like, all right, let's just talk about him.
If it's not Woj or Shams, just kind of ignore it.
Exactly.
Exactly, dude.
It
gives you a lot of peace of mind. Like I can't do the rumor mill. I have like some friends that are like, oh, this is there's interest in this player from said team. It's like, what does that mean? Like, have two people with alerts on and you're fine.
Yeah. And there's so many, and the craziest thing now it's like, there's all these local guys that cover teams that have sources. Mm-hmm. They're trying to report ahead of time. Like this guy told me that this might happen. This guy's going to come to this team and this guy. And I mean, I worked in the NBA for 6 years. I was around front offices. I was around coaching staffs. Now, admittedly, around the most dysfunctional organization in sports at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there can't be that many sources out there, guys. Like there's two guys who get it right every time. So they obviously have the best sources.
Yeah.
Everyone else's sources, who are you talking to? You can't be talking to anybody important, important.
We saw this, at least I personally saw this. And if you want, this can lead right into the Knicks. Sure. The Lonzo and Drummond talk around the Knicks, just like, I'm waiting for the two big ones to say anything concrete. And mm-hmm. like a lot of Knick fans panicking during our live shows, like, please don't trade for Drummond. Please trade for Lonzo. It's like, I'm not believing anything until it actually happens. And I feel like it's like a healthy way to follow this league and to cover this league is to just find the people you trust. And they're like 95% correct. And you won't go wrong. The Drummond thing was interesting because there was a legitimate panic amongst Knicks world that they were gonna not only sign this guy but trade for this guy, like trade assets for a guy that's gonna get bought out. And it's like that would be such a Knicksy move. And the one thing I could say about Leon and Wes is like that Knicksy move has not happened yet. Even Derrick Rose, everybody panicked when it happened because it was like, oh, he's gonna take quickly. I mean, it's like no. Austin Rivers lost his job. Yeah. So if anything, that's actually identifying a need for another point guard. So quickly isn't your primary ball handler. And
right.
if anything, it's helped the team more than it's hurt it.
So. Yeah. We're Knicks fans. I'm sorry if I was just got distracted briefly by the score of this game. I didn't realize how bad
the score
was. 110-90. Portland's getting beat by Utah.
Okay.
What were Knicks fans' thoughts on Lonzo? Were they high?
We're very high on Lonzo.
Okay,
Knicks fan wants Lonzo. I'm with you in watching his 3-point percentage go up every single week this season.
I've been around great shooting coaches. I've seen guys transform their shots. I've never seen anything like what he's done with his shot. Mm-hmm. Fred Vinson, who is the guy who gets the credit for working with him. I mean, if I was a player anywhere in the world that had a hitch or a problem, I'd go work with that guy because it's one of the most remarkable shooting turnarounds I've ever witnessed, ever.
So you're saying Elfrid Payton should go work with Vincent is what you're saying.
You guys, so Knicks fans just despise Elfrid Payton. And
reason.
And admittedly, I haven't watched every Knicks game. And I know he's not like a great player, but man, we can get into that. Like, what? It's just like Knicks fans are just like, I feel like there's this thought with Knicks fans that if Elfrid Payton wasn't on the team, he might be a title contender.
No. Okay. Let me clarify.
Okay.
First of all, it's not think, it's absolutely they'd be a title contender. So let me start with this because it's actually evolved to this point in the Elfrid Payton slander. It is not personal. Like somebody has made a name for themselves being the one Elfrid Payton defender. Like Payton makes a wide open layup and it's like, see, it's like, guy, like how many more times does he have to miss a wide open RJ on a night that he's like not missing for me to be upset that he's not the guy that you want as your point guard? It is not personal. I am recognizing that this guy is a human and are any hatred towards him is more just he's a backup point guard playing starters minutes, and in a Tibbs rotation that means you're given carte blanche and preference over guys that probably could be helping you and spacing the floor better. They had this stat from Basketball Index came out today. The three worst lineups as far as like most minutes played, as far as spacing goes in the NBA, the Knicks have 58, and I think two other teams, like Portland has a lineup that is 59th, and Indiana has one that's 60th. But the thing about the Knicks one is it's their starting five. So the way Tibbs' rotation works, like his starting five plays significantly more than his backups.
Yeah.
And I at home on my couch know what the rotation's going to be. You better believe other teams know, like, okay, they're going to make a run in the second quarter when they go to Quickly and Alec Burks and Derrick Rose and, you know, Randall will come back in early for Obi and it'll be this rotation that, you know, starts to give us a little bit of, might build a lead on us. We can attack them because in the third quarter, no matter what happens, we can attack them at the beginning of the third when Peyton's on the floor for the first 10 minutes without question. And that's significant. Like that's consistently what's been happening with this team. He doesn't, once he cuts, like gets to the paint, it's I'm shooting this basketball. It's not look to distribute. It's not penetrate and kick or pitch to guys that are shooting 40% from three this season. RJ Barrett last night went 6 of 6 and scored 29, 6 of 6 from three and scored 29 points on 14 shots. and he probably should have shot more. Like on a with a different point guard, he probably gets 40 last night.
I need more of that from RJ. Yep, I got a top shot that's just losing value by the day with this. But all the top shots are losing value. But
like that's the thing. It's not because of him.
I know he's playing great.
His last 40 games, he's been incredible. It's that Julius Randle's long twos aren't falling anymore, and the primary ball handler that's on the floor with him never passes. Man, if I created a collage of screenshots that are just Peyton penetrating. The defense collapsing and RJ wide open, I could probably cover up your entire apartment. Like that's how much it's just become like an every night thing. There are four or five instances where you just go, oh, RJ's wide open. And like
so weird.
He like the other night, Breen and Walt Clyde Frazier, who do the MSG broadcast, they opened the broadcast talk against the Nets saying, like, much maligned Elfrid Payton is in there for his defense. And with Kyrie, it's important for him to play a majority of minutes tonight. Kyrie had 34 points in three quarters, primarily guarded by Elfrid Payton. Like, first play of the game, Kyrie takes him off the dribble and one. Like, I don't know what... Like, I trust that Tibbs sees something I don't, and yet I can't help but think that the former head of CAA recognizes that Randall's agent is the same as Elfrid Payton's agent, and he's just playing some politics. Like, I can't help but think that has something to do with it.
You know, it's wild is like, I always wonder that with agents too. And I actually have a relationship to CAA. One of my best friends is high up there. I've had dinners with Leon and Wes before. I have a pretty remarkable Wes story of how I met Wes.
We may have to get you on the pod to tell these stories. I'm just letting you know that now.
I wondered that with these guys. I did wonder that. I did wonder, will that affect them? Because they also, you know, like Obi is a CAA guy. Quickly, obviously, the relationship to Cal. And so it's Tibbs, CAA guy, like a lot of CAA. And the only reason I do think they've done a really good job in a short time, like this turnaround, you know, part of it is Julius Randle, who they didn't sign, who was there before, and RJ Barrett, who was not one of their guys. So a lot of that remains to be seen. But when I was in Charlotte, we kind of had this situation where everyone was represented by the same agency, and you saw a lot, like the coach, the GM, and the number two pick, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, were all represented by CAA. Now, there was a lot of other problems in Charlotte, huge problems, but there can be a problem. There can be like this incestual thing where if everyone is represented by the same agency, then people are like working for each other instead of the good of the team. Like, you know, so I could see where that's a little... Not that that's happening, but I could see where there's a little concern there.
It's one of my nitpicks. So, because like, again, I said it at the top, any Knicks fan that thought they'd have 25 wins this late in the season, I predicted them, their over-under was 22. I thought they were going to win 17 because I thought Julius Randle would be traded at one point in the season, and they were going all in on Cade Cunningham and Jalen Suggs. It was my only explanation for them not really doing anything in free agency this offseason other than Alec Burks and re-signing Payton and Nerlens Noel, you know? So I thought this was like, okay, so they're going to tank this year. Fine. That's why you get Elfrid Payton to play your starters minutes. Now they've defied expectations. And I'm sorry, it's not necessarily that I think they'd be like a three seed. Like there's a clear top three. You cannot tell me there's not a better version of this team that isn't Derrick Rose starting, Elfrid Payton playing 15, 16 minutes a game off the bench, and just not having to play starters minutes where he's hurting the team. And as a result, I pray he doesn't check his mentions, but you cannot tell. Like, my eye test backs that up. The numbers back it up. It's frustrating because they've lost five of six and their schedule just gets worse.
Yeah.
The rest of the season. And in all five of these five losses, they've had double-digit leads. And it's when the starters come back in that those leads disappear.
Does D. Rose have the, like, I know he's coming back from the protocols, but does he have the legs to be a starter on a Tibbs team at this point? Because you know how it is. Like, if you start, you're going to play a ton of minutes.
It's interesting. In the beginning, he did. And there was some hope that, like, Peyton's just going to play 19 minutes. Like, the biggest thing is that Quickly is playing, like, 13 minutes a game. And, like, Haley O'Shaughnessy came on the pod maybe a month or two ago when they were promoting Spinsters. Yeah. And it was like, she said, like, I see a lot of what happened to Chris Dunn could happen to Quickly, where you just get in the doghouse because Tibbs, like, does not trust rookies to play through rookie mistakes. And regardless of whether it might actually help him long-term, might help your team long-term and short-term in this case, I'm going to trust the guy that has some experience, has veteran experience, even if it's not exactly good experience. But as far as Derrick Rose goes, I do think there's a version where he could play 25 minutes a night, and they're just a better team with him on the floor. He's a better defender than Peyton. He's a better shooter than Peyton. And look, I don't know how you feel about this guy, but there's just no way you can convince me that on a Tom Thibodeau team that Frank Ntilikina can't contribute, especially.
It's just crazy. You remember Norris Cole from the Miami Heat? Yes. I was talking to him because I actually do a show with him too.
Oh, okay.
And we got into it about how it's just absurd how guys get written off so young, so quickly in this league. Like, Frank's what, 22?
Yeah, 22.
Yeah. I mean, for all the stuff and the Elfrid Payton thing, it's fascinating that this is what has become of him, because when he came into the league, his whole thing was that he was going to be one of the best passers in the NBA. Mm. He was like getting Rondo comparisons, like not a great shooter, but he can pass the ball and he can defend and this and that. And now he won't pass the ball. But if it's a guy who's just trying, is supposed to be a defender and score and get to the rim, that's what Frank is.
Yeah. It's literally, and the biggest thing was his shooting. And this season he's shooting 40. Oh, I don't know if it's still over 40, but like he stretched this year where he was their highest 3-point shooter on the team. And like, he went through a 3-game stretch where he couldn't make anything and then broke out going 4-for-6 in a game. And then Elfrid Payton came back, Derrick Rose came back, and now Frank's relegated to the bench. Like, I just watched Luka torch this team. Could have used Frank. Just watched Tatum and Brown torch this team. Could have used Frank. Just watched Kyrie put up 34 and 3/4 on this team. Yeah. Could have used Frank. Like, last season, it was this weird year where Scott Perry and Steve Mills said we never wanted KD and Kyrie anyway. It's like, no, you traded Porzingis because you thought that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And the one highlight of last year was going into Dallas, the first game against Porzingis, and Frank like guarded everybody on the court, like gave Luka fits all night. That, I think, is his role on a team, is you're not expecting him to, like, what you get offensively is house money. He's going to like be a beast on the defensive end. Yeah. And I can't help but think that that's something that would actually benefit the Knicks right now. A team that can't really close offensively is just a team that you're going to need to more win games defensively instead.
Mm-hmm. And that this is, again, with all these rotational things that you're talking about, this is where this is where the relationship between the front office and the coach comes into play, because you can't help but wonder, they're buddies, right? Like Leon and, for years, Leon was negotiating to get Tibbs jobs, right? And now he's hired Tibbs to be his coach. Is Leon going to walk into Tibbs's office and be like, play these young guys, dude? Like, I'm done with this bullshit. Because that's what your front office's job is, right?
I highly doubt it, unfortunately.
Yeah, so that's where that relationship becomes interesting. Let's talk about some of the positive stuff, though, right?
Yes, please.
Like, I would tell you this is hard to believe, but at my last job where I was producing NBA content, I was before last season, I was banging the drum of Julius Randle could lead this team to an 8 seed. I really thought that.
Okay.
I genuinely told people that I worked with
the year off. There you go.
They literally were like, you're an idiot. Can't happen. This roster's. I was like, just wait till you see what I said. Julius Randle was going to be an all-star. I was just like, look, man, the guy's skill set is absurd. Like, he's one of those guys who people write him off because he puts up numbers on shitty teams. But watch. Like, he has a chance now to be the guy. I think he's going to be really good. It took a year longer than I thought, but he has been. I know you said the long twos aren't falling as much.
Well,
as
so
possible,
it's,
but he's just,
it's a combination. So the night of the trade deadline, they played Washington, and he took a knee to the thigh, and like that shit hurts. The problem is he plays with Tom Thibodeau, and like Julius is a warrior, and he's won over this city this year in so many different ways. Like Knicks fans would have taken a second round pick for Julius Randle. Like the number one trade that was talked about was like Julius Randle for Nick Batum in like a sign and trade. Then you buy out Batum, yeah, and like, you'll just take a second round pick. We wanted Randle off the team so Toppin could play those minutes, and boy were we wrong, because Randle came in with, obviously, a lot of time in the gym, a lot of time in film study, because those passes that Elfrid Payton doesn't make, Julius Randle makes. And the way he creates for guys, he and Reggie Bullock have this pick and pop that is working, and this dribble handoff with RJ that's working. It's been unbelievable. I don't, like, Knicks fans are talking max extension. I don't even know if we're there yet, but
yeah, it's tough.
I think after that injury, where like right now Julius Randle playing like second in the league in minutes a game, first in minutes a game, like he needs like a week off, and you're just not gonna get that when you're in a playoff push, yeah, and you really don't have a guy to replace him at this point, because Obi Toppin's not ready to play 35 minutes a game. And so as a result, the long twos aren't falling anymore. Some of his shot selection is a little bit suspect. He goes ISO way too much for my liking lately, but a lot of that is the fact that when he would go ISO in the first half of the season, good things happened. Yeah. Those shots were falling in the first half, so I didn't mind. But recently, in particular, like if you look at his shooting lines, pretty much since that Washington game, it just seems as if there's something off about him, and it's maybe also led to why they've lost a couple games now, that he's just not able to be as efficient as he used to. Like his true shooting is still significantly higher than a lot of us thought it would be. And look, all this to say, it's a win. Like this season is a positive from Julius Randle. I think we have a guy. It's also a reason why you now have to go get like another guy, so he's not shouldering the load and running out of gas like three quarters of the way through the season. But it's absolutely a positive what he's done this year.
Yeah, you definitely. And your guys' cap situation is great, right? Like,
they still have cap space. They might have to end up having to write a check, which I've always wanted a team to do, and I think the Knicks might actually do it.
That's actually, when I was in Memphis, I think that's how we ended up with Zach Randolph, which is we were like below the minimum salary and had to like make a move to bring in enough salary just to get above the threshold, and then fell ass backwards into one of the best players in franchise history. In terms of getting another guy though, RJ looks good, dude. Like, I think he's come a long way in terms of potentially being like a second or third scorer on a really good team. Like, you see the development, his shot looks really good. And I've always liked his ability. Like, I love coming out of college, I always loved like his body control when he goes up to the rim, and the way he's able to contort himself, and lefties are hard to guard as it is. I've always really liked that part of his game. His shot's falling. He looks like he's sort of turning into that maybe not second option, but second or third option on a good team.
See, that's just it. It's literally just an upgrade of point guard, is what I'm talking. Like, that other guy could be Lonzo, who doesn't necessarily have to run your offense. He just has to be like, we had one of the guys from Bourbon Street Shots on to talk about Lonzo nearing the deadline, and like, what, like, is he actually as good as Knicks fans make him out to be? If he could just be a connector, like somewhat like hockey assist, like Jason Kidd used to do, and just make defenses honor you when you're shooting threes, because what defenses are doing are trapping Randle and RJ to get the ball into Payton's hands. Like, if Lonzo could just upgrade that way, that's the other guy I'm talking about. I'm not even saying they need to go get Lowry or DeRozan or Conley, but by all means, do it if you want to. That's what I mean by another guy, is just an upgrade of point guard. As far as RJ goes, I had to eat a little crow because I wasn't so hard on him that I thought he was bad. Like, I didn't think, like, oh, wow, we really, like, screwed up here. Like, Tyler Hero, look what he's doing. Look at what Hunter and Langford and all these other guys that are probably going to be better shooters than him. It was so tough to get a read on what he is last season. Playing in this offense, like, David Fizdale had no idea how to use him. He's just standing in the corner. He's, like, playing with these ball-dominant guys like Marcus Morris and Elfrid Payton and last year's version of Julius Randle. And there was really no, like, RJ, we're going to run the offense through you at times. Now, I never thought he was going to develop into this kind of shooter. And what you hear around the team is, like, this dude's work ethic, like, what he does to make sure, like, what, because, like, you can look at numbers, you can look at shooting form, and, like, that's, you can pretty much tell just by watching. But defensively, like, what he's been, like, especially, like, on-ball defense, like, perimeter defense this year, it's let me see, like, maybe there is a path to being, like, a 4 or 5-time All-Star for RJ Barrett. Maybe he is going to end up averaging 23, 24 points a game at some time. Like, what is it, the last 40 games, he's shooting 46% from three, which That's is crazy. Ridiculous. Like, last night, going 6 for 6, and then he'll go 4 possessions not touching the ball is extremely frustrating. And, like, in the last couple fourth quarters, he's been that way. Like, I know Anthony Edwards had that, like, we wanted RJ to shoot the ball. Well, that's, like, the one shot he's missed over the last 2 weeks. So congratulations, Anthony Edwards.
I'm going to defend Anthony Edwards.
Go ahead, say it.
And I not about RJ, because okay. I agree with you. I love Anthony Edwards. I think he's one of the most genuinely just, like, happy to be playing basketball young guys I've seen in a while. Like, he's just a kid. I don't think he meant they wanted RJ shooting the ball. I think he meant they wanted anybody but Julius shooting the ball. Okay. And the way it came out was, that's who we want shooting the ball. He meant to say what we wanted. Because he started by saying, like, we were trying to stop Julius from getting the ball. That's who we want shooting the ball. I think he meant that's who we want not shooting the ball. I think he was talking about Julius and not calling out. Now, we talked about it on the show because it was funny the way he said it. It was like, damn, he's calling out RJ. The more you listen to Anthony Edwards, I don't think he's that guy. I think he genuinely was like, yeah, coach didn't want Julius shooting the ball, so we wanted anybody to shoot the ball.
So two things. One, fine, that's fair. I would tell Anthony Edwards that you said that to New York City, which does not listen to rational right. explanations. Like, no, you talked about our guy. How dare you? Also, yeah. Like, two, Anthony Edwards, do your homework. What Randall's been the last 3 weeks, you probably wanted him shooting that ball also, even though he was having a good night.
Coach. He said coach didn't want the ball in Julius Randle's hand.
Well, coach probably should have wanted the ball in Julius Randle's hands. Okay. I didn't trust coach, the Knicks are going to make a shot in that moment.
I'm going to be an Anthony Edwards defender on here. So that's blame fine. It on the coach. Blame it on the coach.
I blame the coach then. I actually was like, I was okay with RJ getting the ball. I didn't like the shot that he ended up, like, him taking a fadeaway long two is not his game. Like, I thought he was going to go get to the rim or at least try to get to the foul line at some point. But regardless, that was last week. And
look, I think
what RJ's been is really good lately.
Yeah. And I think just looking at the season in general, as we wrap up, like, Julius is obviously such a great piece in RJ. Mm-hmm. I just think, like, you couldn't have asked, you know, coming into the season, there's definitely 3, maybe 4 or 5 guys on this team right now that legitimately could be part of a core going forward on a good team. When you talk about quickly, I hear Mitch, if he gets healthy, right?
The Mitch thing is, because he's also got this, because he's a second round pick, they can either let him be a restricted free agent, but if they, like, pick up his option, he's an unrestricted free agent. So it's a weird thing with Mitch. I'll just say this, like, I went into this season with so many questions, and that's where the expectations that they were going to tank came from. And here we are 52 games in, and like they have a guy, like you said, they have four or five guys. Like what Alec Burke has been, like, oh, there's your sixth man.
Revelation, that
That's
guy.
Perfect. Yeah. Nerlens Noel has fallen into a role as a backup center. They kind of have two backup centers right now, and Taj Gibson and Nerlens Noel, but that's where like the Mitch thing comes in. We're now at the point where all of those questions have started to become answers, and now I can start to like look, go shopping a little bit. Like they just they need a point guard. Yeah. Like I don't mean to keep bringing this back to Elfrid Payton, but the
I knew that was going to happen.
It's just the one consistent thing is like if he's like okay, so we talked about Chris Paul before. There's obviously the connection with CAA and Chris Paul. Like Chris Paul is his former agent, is the Knicks' current president of basketball operations. There was all that connection during those 7 months where the Knicks didn't play a game, where people are like, well, maybe the Knicks will be the team that trades for Chris Paul. And now you look at it, if the Knicks had done that trade, what are they if it's just trading for Chris Paul and not signing Elfrid Payton? Like, Burks comes in, Noel comes in. I see the only thing I keep going back to is they probably would have had to trade Randall, which makes this whole conversation moot. But they had these guys that were on one-year options where if you're just using them for salary filler, you didn't really have to trade. Like, Phoenix didn't have to trade a player to OKC. It was, like, two picks, Kelly Oubre, and some salary filler. So if there was a way the Knicks could have gotten Chris Paul, what does that team look like? Because the consistent thing on this team is – like, they need a point guard. So if you have the point guard, are they the fourth seed? Are they closer to Milwaukee than they are? Like, the cluster of teams from four down? So now going into next season, that's why the consistent thing with Knicks fans is Lonzo Ball. It's Kyle Lowry. It's
I'd go pay Lonzo. I'd go pay Lonzo.
I would, too. What does pay look like?
Probably somewhere in the $20 million range.
So 4 for $80 is what...
Something like that.
It's what we say, Knicks fans, because we have a say in this. I mean, I would be comfortable with.
I'd consider 25. I've seen guys get worse contracts than that for a guy who I just truly genuinely think is like the prototypical what you want in a point guard right now in the NBA, and he's 23 years old. So
I think if there's a world where 4 for $85 is what he'll take, awesome.
Yeah.
I think you have to go back to, can you eventually trade the contract? Which, not that you'd want to, but just from a value perspective, you don't want to get stuck with an untradeable contract because then you're having to attach assets when you go to get rid of it if you need to. And I think 4 for $85 is the most, as long as he stays this productive, where he won't then become like something that's a burden on this team and takes away all your flexibility. I think Lonzo would be... of the realistic options, my number one choice too. Lowry is right behind him. And then like you do something there and then you add what they're going to do in the, like they have three picks this year in the draft. Yeah. So you see what they do there. Maybe that's how you upgrade and keep your youth, but also then try to compete for like a top four seed next season. So
I'll say this, my two things for Knicks fans that I'll say,
I'll take
it back. Don't give up on Obi Toppin. Don't give up on him.
Oh, yeah.
Don't give up on him.
We didn't even talk about him. Yeah.
Don't give up on him. We don't have to dive deep into him. I still think there's just so much upside with that kid. I think he's going to be very good. I do.
When he plays with a point guard, like with Derrick Rose, like it's no mistake or not. It's definitely not a coincidence that his struggles started when Derrick Rose got COVID and then missed 3 weeks. And the day he came back was his best quarter of basketball. He's also playing 11 minutes a game. You got to give him more time.
And I also say, while I know that eventually you guys are going to get frustrated with Tibbs, appreciate it, because regardless of what happens, whether he's the coach in five years or 2 years, these young guys are going to be better when he leaves. Mm-hmm. They're going to be better. And you can already see it. I worked for Steve Clifford for 2 years, who's essentially just like reputation wise, a nicer Tibbs. they have this ability to build confidence in young guys and put them in positions to learn what they're good at in the NBA. And you'll see the development. Now, eventually you're going to be like, he's running guys into the ground and he's stubborn and this and that, but these guys like Julius Randle, RJ Barrett, they're going to be better off for playing for Tibbs. Now he might not be the coach to coach you to a championship. I don't know. We'll see. But when you're getting frustrated, because you're going to get frustrated, just remember, in the long run, these young guys that we have are going to be better because Tibbs has taught them how to play basketball the right way in the NBA, because there's a lot of coaches that don't do that.
I agree. I mean, I joked around he's a coach of the year. Obviously, there's three coaches on championship contenders that would probably deserve more votes than he does. I'll wrap up with this. In my wildest dreams, being competitive 52 games in was
never part
not
of
on the menu. And here we are. As of right now, are the eighth seed. And while I still think there's that 10% that I think he's too stubborn to adjust, that other 90% has been a joy and a revelation this season. And I'm glad it's happening for this team.
Yeah. Well, dude, awesome conversation.
Yeah.
We hit a lot of stuff. Nick's Film School is the podcast.
Yes, it is.
At Andrew J. Claudio _.
Correct.
On Twitter. Man, you guys do a ton of stuff, man. Like the pod, live. Where's all the stuff?
Okay. Just tell everybody all the stuff. We got to start with the newsletter, the Knicks Film School newsletter, which is written by John Macri, drops pretty much every day. So every day, if you want to subscribe, we have a paid model. We also have a free model if you want to check it out. So that's go to the at Knicks Film School on Twitter and look for the links in the pinned tweet. You'll find the newsletter. You'll find the podcast, which we do 3 days a week, and then a locker room on Saturday. That's all the programmed content. And then we do a post-game live stream on YouTube Live after every game for 25 to 35 minutes. I'm actually doing the live stream, I guess, when this airs tonight on Friday night. So you get to hear my thoughts on the Knicks game. Awesome. I think they're playing the Pelicans tonight. So that should be fun. We'll see. We get to first look at Lonzo.
Brandon Ingram, is he playing?
Yeah. I'm hoping Zion plays because I like watching Zion. Yeah. Plus, you know, RJ gets to play against Zion.
Uncertain for Friday's game.
So you get the post-game live streams, which then are also available on the podcast as well. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Knicks Film School and follow me on Twitter at Andrew J. Claudio _. And I'm live tweeting as many games as I can. Joey, I echo what you said. This is a fun conversation and I appreciate your insight and for having me on. This was great.
Oh yeah, we'll do it again. There's plenty. It's awesome because you obviously are on top of the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
So next time I'll bring you on, we'll talk about everything.
We'll talk
about the whole league. I wanted to get you first time on Knicks, but next time we'll dive right in and we'll talk about everybody because there's so much. I mean, as we get close to the playoffs, it never ends, never stops. We're here 5 nights a week. So anytime you want to come on, jump on, man.
Well, I appreciate that. And as I forecasted earlier, as we get close to the playoffs, there will be less and less Knicks to talk about. So.
We'll see. All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll see you on Monday. Jabari Davis, fan favorite, returns to the pod. See you on Monday. Later, guys.